and I know that it's true. Episode 11 is for you. We are here. We are here on episode 11. Is this heaven? We are here. We are here on episode 11. This is heaven, and I know that it's true. 11 is for you.
Analog thoughts.
Hello, welcome to episode 11 of Analog Thoughts. I'm your host, Steven, aka Mount Analog, and on this podcast, we talk about metaphysics, spirituality, science. We get into some culty stuff. We get into some weird, not weird, but we get into some history, some unique and interesting historical things, and I just kind of run the gamut on whatever I think sounds interesting to ramble about. So if you're here and you've made it to episode 11, thank you for dialing into the frequencies for this long. Lately, I've been working on a ton of music, so there's been a little bit of gap between episode 10 and episode 11. I've been trying to focus on creating a completely new song every week and pretty much starting it and finishing it in a week, and also making paintings that go with those pieces of music. It's been really fun because I feel like as an artist, whether you make music or visual art or whatever your craft is, sometimes you can get wrapped up in thinking that the thing you're working on is your magnum opus, and like this is the thing that I'm ready to show the world. It's finally ready. It's the coolest, best, most potent thing I can make. But with the mentality of making things more often and sharing things more frequently, you can kind of get away from the perfectionism that can come with that headspace of creating your magnum opus, and you can just create things that are a little time capsule of how you felt during that specific piece of your life. And I think a lot of the times those little time capsules, those little things that those little creations that encapsulate the raw emotion that you feel, that are just refined enough to still to also be re-listenable or re-look-attable or re-watchable, if you will, that those creations can have the most impact a lot of the times. And the stuff that you can spend months and months on can sometimes fall flat. Not always, though. Sometimes the stuff that takes months and months is just as potent of a piece as the stuff that takes a week. But on a personal level, I've just been experimenting with stuff and trying to take the route of sharing things a bit more frequently and creating things a bit more frequently. And it's been really fun. It's been really fun, and I feel like it allows me to just get as fully expressive as I want to. I'm not trying to learn that nothing is perfect, but I'm really trying to allow myself room to breathe when it comes to the creative process, and knowing that projects are never really done. You just have to set them free. And that just comes back to what I was saying about it. The most important piece of it is, were you able to encapsulate a piece of yourself or a piece of your current experience in the thing that you're creating? I think that's the most important piece. Is it emotionally and spiritually potent? Not did the kick drum slap hard enough, or did the brush stroke look right? Did that highlight look right on the thing? Even though those aspects are important and they can carry a lot of weight to enhance the vision itself is and should remain at the forefront of the project. So anyway, enough about me rambling about what I've been working on. Thanks for being here for episode 11. I made a note here to mention my Patreon. So to the patrons, infinite thank yous right now. And you can find me over there at Mount Analog, MT.ANALOGUE. You get early access to podcast episodes. You get early access to all of my music, all of my art. And I just put like special, I put special posts over there just for the patrons and just to show them some love. So if you are inclined to support, that's the best way to support. Whether you sign up on a monthly level or you just want to donate one time, either way, it helps me have more time to dive into these topics and record this podcast for you. And today's topic, speaking of podcast topics, it's kind of a larger, I don't want to say it's kind of a larger concept, but it's kind of a broad concept. We're going to be talking about the ways that we consume and harness energy. And if you're here on episode 11, you probably know that I like to get metaphysical or spiritual or talk about like the minutiae of the universe and dimensions on the podcast and those kind of things that connect us. And I feel like in a pretty big way that this episode is in that same realm. But I'd like to pan back and look at the tangible potentialities of our species as a whole. I'd like to kind of analyze how we're using energy and where humanity is headed with storing and distributing energy, raw, tangible energy. And our abilities to harness and redirect energy are directly tied to our progress. And it's no mystery that the way we use energy has changed significantly since the dawn of humans. It's really wild how insanely huge our relationship to energy usage has changed over just the past 200 years. And really, 200 years is just a blink of an eye on a cosmic scale, a really super tiny blip. Super tiny blip. To give you an idea of how extreme our energy consumption has changed, we're going to talk about terawatts. And if you aren't familiar with watts or terawatts, don't worry. Just know that they are units of energy and energy consumption over a period of time. And they're like they're bigger than that. There's way more to what watts and kilowatts are, but for this, all you won't really need to understand all the nuances and subtleties of what watts and kilowatts are. For now, just kind of think of a watt as a unit of one, and think of a terawatt as a unit of 1 trillion watts. So in 1800, we were consuming just under 6,000 terawatts per hour globally. And today we're consuming right around 180,000 terawatts per hour. This is a huge jump, but that makes sense because during those years, during that time, we invented and started using so many things like cars, planes, computers, like modern appliances, all of these things that require energy that we didn't have back in 1800. Or energy that we weren't tapping into back in 1800. We've created all this technology that requires more energy. And pair that with a population that has been growing exponentially. And boom, tons of heckin' energy that we need. Lots and lots of energy. So we go from 6,000 to 180,000 terawatts per hour since 1800. And as we grow and create, we use more energy. It's a pretty simple concept to understand. Like, we create more complex things, and our population grows. Thus, we require more energy. And the magnitude of that energy is hard to fully wrap your head around. It's a lot. We're using more than we ever have, and we are harnessing more than we ever have today. Right now, in the world, the U.S. and China are at the top of the energy consumption list. On the flip side, they're also both at the top in terms of electricity generation, which also makes sense. Like, they use a ton, they make a ton. How are we generating this energy? And you probably already know. The top three ways, and these have been the top three ways for many, many years, are oil, coal, and gas. They are not the cleanest, and they are not the safest, and they are certainly on the way out for the foreseeable future. They're not sustainable. And I'm not going to go too deep into what systems have obviously been put into place to profit by big corporations to keep these top three going, because they pretty much glare at us in the face every day. Huge corporations profiting off of ruining the planet. And we all know it. We all see it. It's absolutely real. And the climate is changing because of it. But I'm not, like I said, I'm not going to get too deep into that. This episode isn't about that. This episode is about the future of energy. And this episode is about looking at what happens after these antiquated systems die. And we start to focus on bigger things that don't involve the bank accounts of corporations that don't have our interests in mind. They don't have an interest in progress. They just have an interest in profit. So this episode is sort of framed after we get past these corporate shackles. With all of that, we're getting better as a species with how we use and transmute energy. We have hydropower, wind, solar, biofuels, and other renewable forms of energy that have been making steady progress since the 60s. And since the 60s, the use of the nasty ones have actually been going down. They're still the most used, and they're still heavily used, but their usage is shrinking, and it's making way for better ways to harness and transmute energy, just slowly. But we are making progress, and we're finding new ways to coexist with this floating space rock that we live on. And I personally think that it's going to continue. I don't think we have an option other than to figure out ways to sustainably source energy, which we are. Every month you hear about a new, more efficient piece of technology that's going to be a big part of it, is efficiency, is how objects and machines and computers that we make use energy. And I feel like even in the face of a probable global catastrophe, whether that catastrophe is self-inflicted or not, humans are going to make it through. We're gonna make it through because we're strong. Because we're very strong. And I don't want to, like I said, I don't want to get too wrapped up in the global diplomacy we have to get through to make the vision of a world that thrives off of sustainable energy a reality. I'm peering into the future. This episode's about future energy. So what happens if we get our affairs in order? I know that there's always going to be conflict, and I know that utopia isn't really a thing that happens. It's fundamentally unobtainable. But we will reach a scenario someday where we get further than we ever thought possible with energy and technology, and our petty Earth problems become pretty irrelevant. And so with this progression of energy and progression of humanity and moving into the future of energy, I'm talking about, cue up the drum roll, please, the Kardashev scale. If you're not familiar with the Kardashev scale, it is a method of measuring a civilization's level of technological advancement based on the amount of energy it is able to use. This scale was proposed by an astronomer, Nikolai Kardashev, in 1964. And when we look at the Kardashev scale, we're looking at things on a more cosmic level. We start looking at how much energy we are using both on and beyond Earth. Basically, the scale is set up with three tiers. There's a type 1 civilization, a type 2 civilization, and a type 3 civilization. Type 1 civilization, one that we are approaching. We're currently in a type zero civilization, so we haven't reached type one yet. But we're getting there. Type one civilization is a civilization that can harness all of the energy that reaches its home planet from its parent star. So, yeah, like I said, we're making moves to get there, but we're not quite there yet. And it's not the type one civilization and all of these civilizations, it's not exclusively like you become a type one civilization once you rely solely on solar power, but it's more so think of it as you have efficiently allowed the light from your parent star to impact your planet, and you have effectively harnessed that energy in a way that isn't a detriment to your species, that allows you to progress past a certain point. Then there's a type 2 civilization, which is capable of harnessing all of the energy of its parent star. So tier 1, we're utilizing what gets shot at us from the sun. It shoots us with energy in one way or another, whether we're harvesting the plants or harvesting materials that, like, the sun is responsible for creating, we are utilizing the energy that it provides to us. That's tier 1. Tier 2 is a civilization where, okay, we've harnessed all of that energy. Our technology has expanded further than Earth will allow. We now need to expand, and we're going to go out of our way to harness more energy from the sun than just the energy that the sun is shooting at us. So it's like the next step. It's type 2. Type 2 civilization, you're going out of your way to harness energy that isn't being directly shot at you or that goes beyond your capacity to absorb and hold on the Earth. There's like a ton of theoretical ways that a civilization can do this. I'm going to go into a few of those here in a bit, but first, let's talk about the type 3 civilization. And a type 3 civilization is a civilization in possession of energy at the scale of its own galaxy, which is really kind of hard for us to fathom. And it would be a civilization that has a hyper-intelligence that is beyond our mind's comprehension currently. Like, they would have technology and methods that we just don't. It's so far into the future that we have a hard time seeing. We've jumped off our planet. We've harvested the energy on our planet. Tier 1, harvested the energy from the sun. Tier 2, and then via that, we are harvesting all of the energy in our entire solar system through the harvesting of the energy of the sun. The entire energy of the sun is kind of powering our solar system like a network. And I'm going to get more into this. I know right now the tiers can kind of seem confusing, but I'm going to explain in depth a little more. But just know that as you move up from tier 1, tier 2, tier 3, that we are getting into higher levels of technology and higher levels of energy consumption. Also, for the record, there is a type 4. I keep saying tiers, but it's types. I'll probably use those interchangeably, tier 1, tier 2, tier 3, type 1, type 2, type 3. But there is a type 4 civilization, which is basically a civilization that can harness the energy of multiple galaxies. But then it's like, if you start getting into the theoretical type 4, type 5, where does it stop? Like, type 5 would be, you know, they control the energy of cosmic clusters, and then type 6 is they control the energy of multiple cosmic clusters, and it could literally go on forever. So for this, we're just sticking with the original Kardashevian 3. One of the cool things about the Kardashev scale as well is we can apply it to extraterrestrial civilizations. There are about 40 billion Earth-like planets just in our galaxy, in the Milky Way. Kardashev and other scientists and mathematicians have said that it's very likely that other advanced species would have the same path of energy consumption as ours, but potentially reaching different types of civilization tiers at different rates. Basically, there may be planets not far from us, cosmically speaking, that have harnessed the power of their parent star and are building insanely complex technologies. Not only that, but because of their levels of intelligence, they would most likely be capable of transcending the limitations of interstellar contact, like going beyond the limits of space-time and bending the fabric of reality. That's more of a Type 3 type civilization thing, but those are most likely out there too. We probably have all the types of civilizations existing within our like cosmic sphere. I don't want to say within the Milky Way galaxy, but it's probable that we have those types 1, 2, and 3 existing somewhere within cosmic reach. And we probably look more like, we on Earth probably look more like bacteria to a cosmic civilization, like a Type 3 civilization. They probably look at us and they're like, they are just, you know, they're bacteria, they're fungus, they're ants. Or I don't know, maybe they'd want to come here and party. Maybe they would see how simple things here were and they're like, they would be like, damn, we got things twisted. We need to go down there and just cut loose for a little while. Maybe we're a vacation destination for interdimensional Type 3 species. I hope so. I feel like we probably are. So we have our types of civilizations, and each type has an amount of energy that they consume. Right now, as it stands, if we consume an average of 3% more energy per year, we are going to reach a Type 1 civilization in 100 to 200 years. We would reach a Type 2 civilization in a few thousand years, and a Type 3 in much longer, like hundreds of thousands of years, up to a million years. Right now, like cosmically speaking, we're sitting at about a 0.75 type civilization. But if you really think about it, if you really think about getting to the Type 1 is going to be, some people are still could potentially be alive today to get to the Type 1. There might be someone out there that's like being born today that might see us reach a Type 1 civilization where we harness all of the energy on our planet. Even the Type 3, if you really think about it, the Earth is like 4.5 billion years old. What we know as humans as like Homo genus, what we think of humanoid people, we've only been around 1.5 million years of that 4.5 billion years. So in the grand scheme of things, we're going to be hitting that Type 3 civilization in no time. We're going to be there in a cosmic blink of an eye. It's going to take us less time to get there than it has to have existed as humanoid creatures. But then also, because this is all just based on theory, the Kardashev scale is all just a theory, there are a ton of others that think we're going to hit those types of civilizations much sooner. Some people say we're going to have the help of self-replicating robots and exponential technological growth. By exponential technological growth, what I mean is like when you look at a scale of technology and technological progress, and then you pan back, it starts to go up very quickly. And with exponential growth, rather than a gradual incline or even a quick-looking incline, it starts to shoot directly upwards. It's like a hockey stick curve. And if the trend continues and we start creating technology at a rate that it's currently on, we're not going to have a choice but to figure out new and inventive ways to harness energy in our solar system. So with all that, that's not to say you can't make simple things do amazing feats with little energy, but there is a tipping point. Eventually, complex things become simple things, and simple things become obsolete when we're looking at the scale of future energy. The argument could be made where you could just say we could rely on simple things and kind of like take humanity back, and we're kind of cool just chilling at this point. Why do we need intergalactic travel? Why do we need to look to other planets to harvest their energy? That seems complex. Can't we just keep it simple? But it's really like the nature of humans is to expand and keep moving into different areas and keep spreading their influence as a species as far as they can. And I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with that. I just think that if we don't figure out a way to obtain and store large amounts of energy that we aren't going to be able to make that vision a reality. So however you dice it up, there are humans alive today that might see us hit that type 1 civilization. So if you're listening and you're a little tiny infant and you're listening to this and you're thinking about that future energy, I hope it's awesome. I hope it's amazing. And that brings me to what happens after we hit that type 1 mark. And right now, we're about 0.75% of the way. We're 75%-ish of the way to hitting that type 1 civilization. And we've already preemptively kind of started doing what happens next. We have started colonizing other planets in a basic way. Now we've sent robots to Mars, and we've been to the moon, and we've been analyzing their resources. But really, that's what happens next after we hit that type one. We start expanding out into our general sphere that we can make contact with, and we start mining other planets for resources. We start mining asteroids for resources. Because we've been in need of resources, and we need to expand, and we need to keep going if we're going to move on to that tier 2 and tier 3. This is all, keep in mind, this is all framed within the Kardashev scale. So it's all formed on the notion that we as a species are meant to expand, not meant, but we have this urge and desire to expand, and that this urge and desire is intertwined to the inevitability that we will be almost forced to expand because of our energy consumption. So once we have enough energy and technology to successfully get ourselves stationed on other planets, we'll most likely start terraforming the planets. And terraforming is just changing the geography, changing the atmosphere, changing the mineral concentration, and we do all of this in a way that would further our energy storage and collection and our expansion once again. For example, let's say we got to the planet Mercury, and we found out that Mercury has a ton of elements that we could use to obtain energy really, really fast, but obviously Mercury is way too hot and way too hostile of an environment to set up shop. Well, if we had the means and the technology, we can change the atmosphere by introducing particles of debris and block some of the sunlight. So we could then land, set up shop, and start colonizing. Or maybe we'd spark some kind of explosion in the core of the planet and make some volcanoes go off, and this would block out parts of the sun. Like, these are all just examples of what terraforming looks like and methods we could go about doing it. And who knows, like, there will be technologies that we can't comprehend that are able to terraform planets. There might be like a generator we could set up on Mercury and just be like, set up optimum oxygen levels and set up optimum atmospheric levels. In the future, that will probably be a thing, and it'll probably be a thing that we do pretty regularly. Eventually, in theory, we'd get to the point where not only could we terraform planets, but we could start to change their position in the solar system. Their speed, their direction, their orbit, we could introduce organisms to impact the ecosystems, all to benefit our growth and expansion in one way or another. And that's actually the idea behind a theory called directed panspermia. Panspermia itself is the theory that life can come from outside of the planet it exists on, and that it didn't start on that planet, but came from a meteor or a galactic object of some kind. And directed panspermia, as you probably guessed, is when another intelligent life form sends organic material or like organic seeds to a planet to colonize that planet. There's actually a movie called Prometheus, which is a prequel to Alien. And And that's actually kind of the plot of that movie. It's a cool concept, and if you haven't seen it, it's worth a watch. There's a ton of people, kind of myself included, that think that life on Earth is probably a result of panspermia, or directed panspermia, from an advanced civilization. And who knows, maybe that is true. Either way, it's an interesting theory that maybe something more intelligent than us shot some organic material here or dropped something off so that it could grow and evolve and change. But maybe it wasn't even for energetic gain. Maybe it was just for fun. Maybe it was a science experiment. It's that cosmic theory, like, man, we're all just long drag. Exhale, man, maybe we're a petri dish, brother. We're just an experiment for something we can't even see, brother. You know what I mean, man? That theory is panspermia, directed panspermia. So other than terraforming and panspermia as a type 2 civilization, we'd be getting into heavy energy consumption. We'd have this interconnected web of colonies on different planets with hypercomputers and probably like AI terraforming machines and probably really cool vehicles that went really fast and teleporters and all kinds of crazy stuff. But all at the same time, we would need more energy. But we've used up all of the planets we've got access to in our solar system. We've been going from planet to planet. We've been terraforming. We've been extrapolating energy so that we can build more bases, so we can go to different planets and mine more asteroids. And we're running out of energy. Just like we ran out of energy on the Earth because of our expansion, we are now running out of energy in our solar system because we are expanding so quickly. So we look to the sun. And this is where I was talking earlier about the cool and interesting ways of harnessing more power from the sun. And one of those methods would be constructing something called a Dyson swarm. In a nutshell, a Dyson swarm is a huge, and I mean like freaking huge, ring of giant solar-paneled satellites and space stations that orbit the sun. These satellites could collect and wirelessly transmit energy to wherever it was needed in the solar system, basically making your energy supply limitless. There's also the next step of the Dyson Swarm, which think of this as sort of a phase two of a Pokemon, the next evolution called the Dyson Bubble. And basically the Dyson Bubble is a bunch of Dyson Swarms that make a sphere around the sun. More swarms, more energy, more progress, more expansion. This kind of marks the ending of phase two. When you have successfully harnessed control of all of the energy in your solar system, and you're just balling out. You've set up bases on all the planets, you're mining the asteroids, you put a Dyson swarm around the sun, then you put a Dyson sphere around the sun. So now you're just harnessing all the energy from the sun, and you're expanding. But before we move into the next type of civilization, I want to talk about other potential ways that this type of civilization might go about harnessing energy other than the Dyson Swarm. And these are all theoretical things too, but they're kind of cool things to think about, really like sci-fi things. One of the other ways of harnessing energy other than the Dyson Swarm could be from feeding a stellar mass to a black hole, like a moon or another star. And then the black hole, when black holes eat stuff, they shoot out photons. They go and shoot out a bunch of photons. And we would, so black holes, realistically, they're always shooting out photons, but we could throw something into it, direct something into it that would shoot out mass amounts of photons. And then we could harness those photons, which sounds like a really risky maneuver. But also sounds like the plot of a really good sci-fi movie. Like, we're running out of energy for the galactic expansion. We must put the moon of Jupiter into the black hole 64 Z12. And then it's like, there's a scene where the team gets assembled. You know, they're strapping on like the bandoliers, and there's like the outlaw guy. There's also the sassy robot, and there's also like the alien creature that always has the one-liners, and like you just set it up. We call it, what would we call it? Like photon expansion. Something. I don't know. It'd have to have a cooler title than that. Someone call George Lucas and ask what we should call this thing. If anyone has him on speed dial, just let me know. Photon Syndicate Part 1. I don't know. I got nothing. But either way, I think it's a really cool and really like metal idea. Like, king, 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 king. We are running out of energy. Throw the moon of Saturn into the black hole. Harness the light from the explosion, photon explosion, pulsars, doom. King, 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 king. I would watch that movie. I would watch the heck out of that movie. Another way we might get energy is through a process called star lifting. And star lifting is basically a process where in a controlled manner, we would remove a substantial portion of a star's matter. And we'd cut off a little slice of the star pie. It's way more complex than that, but essentially that's what it is, star lifting. And that could be a whole sci-fi. Maybe that's what we'll call a sci-fi movie. We'll call it star lifting, but then that's their first mission, is they have to do star lifting, but then they have to put a moon into a black hole, and that's way credited. Another way we could get energy is we could also recycle antimatter or recycle dark matter to harness more energy. These are also things that could be in the movie. They could also be in the movie, but okay. Moving on. We are moving on to type 3 civilization. We have full control of the energy in our entire solar system, and now it's time to look beyond our solar system. We're entering God-tier technology and energy consumption here. And remember, at this point, we are mutating as humans as well. The technology is shaping the way we look, shaping the way we think, it's shaping the way we act, it's changing how we consume resources, what resources we need, and how our culture is as a species overall. And at this point, there'll most likely be offshoots of different types of humans that develop and change in different ways in different parts of the solar system. Think about it. Let's say you're part of a lineage of people that has been stationed on a dark planet that has limited water and an abundance of, like, nitrogen. And let's say your lineage has been there for 400,000 years. And you're going to be human-esque, but you're also going to be way different than the person that's come from a lineage of humans stationed on Mercury's moon for 450,000 years and has been blasted with light and has, for some reason, because of terraforming, they have plenty of water and they've adapted to breathing weird gases or something. So we're going to have a lot of human variety. We're all going to be human beings, but in really interesting ways. And just like, that's kind of how life is on Earth. Or that is how life is on Earth. That's how we all are. We're all humans, but because of our biological circumstances and just like where we're birthed out on the floating space rock, we're all different in really beautiful ways. Our appearance, our mode of thinking, our culture, the type of art we make, just it's all different and it's all beautiful. And I feel like that concept is going to be, that motif of human variety is going to be reverberated into the future and into interplanetary travel and the different tiers of different types of civilizations. I think the difference will certainly be a bit more noticeable, but I think it'll be very noticeable, but it'll also make humans even more special and unique and wonderful. So as we explore and expand into our Type 3 civilization, we reach beyond our solar system. We begin to harness the energy of other stars. We build Dyson swarms around one star, and then use that energy to travel to another star and expand. So with that, kind of stick with me here, because this next concept gets a little weird to wrap your head around. Right now, we're on Earth, and we're orbiting around the sun, and we are in a singular solar system. Our solar system as a whole is orbiting around a galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy, at 450,000 miles per hour. And there's this theory that as we go through being a Type 3 civilization and a Type 4 civilization and so on and so forth, we will be able to propel our sun through the galaxy and the rest of the planets in our solar system with it. Basically, we would be using our sun as both a power source and an engine to propel our galaxy, or to propel our planetary system to other planetary systems that are also orbiting the center of the galaxy. That is a wild thought, to just essentially be using our sun as a spaceship and piloting our sun around and the planets that orbit around it to other planetary systems. And when we do make contact with other systems, some of the planets that are in our system will probably want to, you know, branch off and stay in other systems, and some will want to continue along with us, and kind of so on and so forth. And there's so many implications with that. Like, I'm sure at some point we'll probably be using our planets that we've collected along our galactic travels as currency, trading them to other systems for other planets and other resources that we need. Or maybe there'll be outlaw systems that come into your system and try to steal planets. Or maybe we'll unify with other systems in a way that we can't even comprehend and push technology and progress even further. It's so wild, and it could be in our movie. It could be in Black Hole Pulsar Quasar Engage Part 1, Revenge of the Galactic Warriors. I don't know. However you want to dice it up, it's like, are we the product of a hyper-intelligent species that has obtained control of energy on a scale that is beyond our comprehension? Are we an experiment on a hyper-micro level to them? And then conversely, are we not the hyper-dimensional gods ourselves, controlling and transforming energy in unfathomable ways? So many options when you look into the future. Unknown amounts of energy harnessing and transmuting. And I think it's really, we're really in for some beautiful things. We're really in for some beautiful energy creations. Energy forever. Let's wrap this cluster of energy up with today's fun fact. And this fun fact is about natural gas. Natural gas gets bought and sold between countries. Let's shrink it back down. We're back down to 75% of our way to tier one civilization. So we're backing it down to tier zero, type zero, and we're here on planet Earth. And here on planet Earth, the natural gas gets bought and sold between countries. But did you ever really think about how that gas is shipped? Like a big tube of compressed gas or something? And actually, when natural gas is transported between countries, it travels in liquid form. And this way, it takes up less volume. And then once it reaches land, it is kind of turned back into a gas. It's regasified and sent to the pipelines for distribution. And in the U.S., we use a giant underground system of pipelines to distribute gas domestically. We have over 2.5 million miles of distribution pipeline. That is a lot of energy. That is a lot of pipeline. And also, In the United States, we make 80% or 85% of the gas, the natural gas that we use. And this last little nugget was pretty wild to me, actually. The gas and oil industry employs almost 6% of the workforce in the United States. To put that into perspective, that's about 10.5 million people. Damn, that's a lot of energy. We're doing big things already. We're changing the way that we look at energy. We're changing the way that we use energy. We're changing efficiency and energy, reflecting and refracting and expanding and demanding and just going forever and ever. Energy, energy on energy. And I hope that with this episode, you've had an enlightening time listening to me talk about where we're headed as a species and where our energies might be directed. From the micro to the macro, it goes all the way up and then all the way down. Energy forever and ever. You can find me over on Patreon at MT.ANALOGUE for early episodes, early music, early art, and a ton of other stuff. A bunch of energy over there getting sloshed around. But as always, thank you so much for listening and being here and sharing the experience. Remember to check on your mental health and check on the mental health of your loved ones. Bye. Analog thoughts. Analog thoughts. Analog thoughts. Analog thoughts.